AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On Pilot TV this week, we are heading back to 1988 to look at the Lockerbie disaster in the bombing of Pan Am 103 on BBC One, then hopping forward to 1997 to see Kasparov versus the Machines in chess miniseries rematch on Disney Plus, then coming back to the present for a spot of wellness in Nine Perfect Strangers Season 2 on Prime. Plus, Rian Johnson joins us on the show to talk poker face. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast recording 4 days after Kay and Boydie went to the BAFTAs without me, and I believe 2 days since they took a pilot trip to the theatre, again, without me. How you doing? You good?
Having fun? Like that.
Have fun bonding with each other.
The clue as to why you weren't invited to the play, to the theatrical experience, is in the title of the show we went to see, which is called The Comedy... about spies. And you, with your track record when it comes to comedy, and particularly silly comedy, of which this is an unrelenting 2 hours, 20 minutes of silliness, meant that it wasn't the show I thought that you would necessarily...
Well, lest you forget,
Boydie, funny.
I went with you to see Fawlty Towers.
I know, but Fawlty Towers is an all-time classic that I knew you loved anyway. Whereas I don't think you do particularly love The Mischief Theatre Company. Have you ever seen this play that goes wrong, or the show that goes wrong?
No. Although I will say, Hell and High Rollers, which is the D&D podcast I listen to, is done by them.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, which one? A couple of them.
I don't know which members of them, but some of them who are involved in that.
And one of them used to live with John Nugent.
That's right, that's absolutely true. But okay, fine, I will let you off the play.
Thanks.
Let's talk about BAFTA, shall we? So you went on Sunday, you had a good old time. I know this because I saw Kay's Instagram where she was all dolled up to the nines.
Let me say this, her get-up, she wore this kind of like emerald green Wicked-themed dress. Which I have to say was, I have never seen anything like it. The claim, the level of acclaim for Kay's outfit was up there with the level of acclaim of, I don't know, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office.
Shut
I think ITV, I think ITV might be making a drama about your dress. Because honestly, people constantly kept coming up to her and telling her how amazing she looked. It was quite incredible. Mm.
Do you know what? I have to, first of all, give a massive shout-out and thank you to our friend. Oh. Well, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. Our friend, an esteemed former colleague who used to be at Heat, Laura Puddy, who's now a stylist on This Morning, who actually found the dress for me. And yes, I was concerned that I looked like grot bags because I didn't think I could wear green. And she was like, don't be ridiculous, just put it on. And yeah, she did good. I felt good in my dress and I felt happy. And I felt really happy, actually, because I've never been to the BAFTAs and I had the best night and Boyd was my date. We had a good night, didn't we?
We did. When it comes to you not attending, though, I was speaking to Krish, you know, the former head of BAFTA, a friend of the pod, staunch listener to the pod, and we discussed you and whether or not...
and why I'm persona non grata at the BAFTAs.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, and you should be there. He was saying you should be there, and I was like, yeah, he should be, but I don't know if he would actually come, even if he was actually invited. He just wants to be invited.
might come. You don't know. Well, I could wear a green dress.
I think he would come, and I think he'd pull it out of the bag. He'd wear a nice suit, and I think you'd like it, James.
You think?
Maybe. Yeah, I think you would.
I think it's a level of
prestige and glamour that you'd enjoy.
I should have been invited.
Okay, next time I'm going to try and get you on. I think you probably have to get on a jury first. That's the only problem.
Why? Why must I? But can't I just be
a
celebrity guest?
BAFTA. You could be a member of BAFTA, but you're not. Again, you don't want to pay the money.
No, it's expensive.
I was thinking of it.
There's got to be a research. I think you might have to get on a jury.
I need to be a person.
You should be on a jury. You're a top TV podcaster.
Well, okay, fine. Because I wasn't invited, I think that allows me to be mildly critical. So I'm going to say, the only thing I will say about the BAFTAs is, and I was looking through the winners, which we will talk about, I'm sure, in the news section.
Sure.
But
I was like, the problem they have, I think, is that it's very hard to get excited about winners when the show's like a year and a half old. And I genuinely think there's an eligibility window issue they have, because it's what is it beginning of the year to end of the year? It's calendar year.
Yes.
But the actual awards don't happen until 5 months into the year. Yes. So you absolute best, you are 5 months out of date. At worst, you are basically a year and a half out of date. Hmm. Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, I was 15 when that show came out. Like, it's, but genuinely, and we're talking about that, like, really? We're talking about Baby Reindeer again? Like, and no disrespect to these shows. They are very worthy winners. But it feels so stale. And that's, you know, that's not necessarily BAFTA's fault, but I wonder, how do you correct for that? Do you find a way, if you're going to have the show, I know there's a judging period, but there must be a way of 1 year either extending, if they're going to have it in May, do you extend the eligibility, I'm going to struggle with that word, the eligibility period for 1 year to try and make it more up to date? Or can you bring it a little earlier in the year? Like, is there a way of closing that window slightly to make it feel more current?
I agree with you. I think it's an issue. I do think it's an issue, because you've got, on one extreme, you've got Mr. Bates, which is essentially, as you say, 18 months old because it went out on New Year's Day of 2024. And then you have Gavin and Stacey, which went out right in December 25th of the same year, almost a year later. So that feels fine. That feels, of course, snubbed, by the way, in the scripted comedy category by the jury. Talking of jurors, I want to keep meaning to get in touch with every single one of those jurors.
He's going to go on a rant.
Finally get what the fuck went wrong with that jury, because honestly, for not to be included in the four nominations is a scandal. So there's that. But you're right. I think for the audience, it's a bit weird that you're suddenly giving an award again to Mr. Bates, for example, which has already been recognised by RTS, you know, and I think probably by, it was in the NTAs as well, mm-hmm. they got an award. So it feels, it does feel out of date, I think that's true. But the only way around it, it's been in May for years, decades, I think, the TV awards. So it's been going on for a long while. But it feels more stock now, I think, because the distance between stuff airing and being on TV feels more stark now. I think we're all more clued up, aren't we? I don't know. But I think the only way around it, because you've got the film, they have the film awards, right?
It's hard to bring it forward.
Just before the Oscars in February. And it's a big production. Each of these things is a huge production. So I think for them, it's like, well, we can't do it before the film awards, because the film awards have to be earlier in the year before the Oscars. They have to squeeze them in before the Oscars. So that transformed the film awards, right?
Yeah.
So I think it all stems from that. The film awards have to be there. They can't really be moved. And then you can't really do these awards in January. It'd be too soon.
Yeah.
So they end up being, there's this gap till
May.
But
genuinely, next year, just give yourself like a year and a half eligibility window. And that's obviously not ideal, because it's maybe not the most fair, but I feel it could be a short-term solution to the problem.
It's a good point. Yeah, you could do like a one-off 18-month or
right.
so, and then after that, the eligibility
And then
window
it goes back
is,
to a year again, but then it becomes like, whatever, it's like March to March
June
or April to April
to
or however they want to do it. Yeah.
No, I think...
Because the production
I'm sure
of the show...
I'm sure it's been discussed.
Yeah, well, I guess it must have been, because it's the production of the show, the logistics of that takes time.
Yeah.
The actual choosing of the winners, like, you can slot that shit in. Do you know what I mean? I don't think that's the problem.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's notable.
I'm just saying, if they had invited me, I could have shared this advice with them on the night.
Well, James, can I tell you, you came up in conversation.
Oh, God.
Yes. No, in a very good way. So I want to give a shout out to Dickie Welsh, who came up to Boyd and I to say he loved the podcast.
Dickie, who was invited.
Dickie, who crucially was invited.
Right.
And
Well, I think he was nominated, wasn't he?
Yes. Well, what's his official title? I called him the Grand Fromage.
Series director of Loose Women.
Yeah. So
bit
of a big deal. And then, right, so he listens to the podcast and enjoys it and said, I've got a suggestion for a cultural exchange. And James is laughing because he knows what's coming. He said, I would love to invite all three of you to come and sit in the audience of Loose Women. And I said, Dickie, if you listen to the podcast, you know that James would rather rip his face off than come. And he started laughing. He goes, that's why he thinks it would be funny for us all to come down.
You're saying, so this would be like a podcast outing that I'm invited to.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't just
unusually
be two of you, I'd get to come with.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot
novel.
There's a lot of obstacles in the way, and including the fact that you would be going into an ITV building and I couldn't guarantee your safety. and also, you know, you might be the object of desire of the Loose Women, who knows? But Mm. Are you up for it?
I literally do not know.
I was going to say.
That show
he doesn't know what that show is.
That's amazing. That's better.
I have absolutely
no
idea.
Surprise.
We've got a greater chance of him saying yes then.
You have. I genuinely don't know what it is.
Loose Women, you should really know what it is. It's a prestige drama starring Vanessa Redgrave.
Holiday Granger.
Holiday Granger.
He's in.
I see what you're doing here.
As rival women in a TV studio.
On a spaceship.
On a spaceship.
Buying for the affections of a bald, tall man.
Right, I see. Yeah.
And there's a dragon somehow in the cupboard.
And zombies.
And the right size subtitles.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I'm in,
and
obviously.
There's a little bit of sadistic violence thrown in.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. just a hell of it.
So what's your answer for
this? I'm in. Count me in.
I said to him, Dickie, yeah. I said, James won't know what Loose Women is. And he was like, yeah, you're probably
I outright just said he will absolutely refuse. But
I've heard of it because I think my mum has talked about it in the past.
Have you ever seen The View?
I don't know what it is.
In America, when you go to America, have you seen The View?
No.
With Whoopi Goldberg, etc.?
No.
Okay. Well, that's a reference point.
Don't need to convince him anymore. He said
no,
yes.
No, that's it. I'm in.
He said yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you're in. Yeah, he said yes.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Dickie, arrange it. Get in touch.
It's actually a good show because I watch it quite a lot. On the days I'm not in the office, I watch This Morning pretty regularly. And then straight after This Morning is Loose Women at 12:30 every weekday. And they have, and you know, Jan Street Porter is one of the Loose Women, and she's on, you know, not every day, but most days. And she's one of the most intelligent, interestingly opinionated
people. I'd love to see Janet Street Porter.
I grew up watching
with James.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, so it is an interesting show. And they have Loose Men. They have the spin-off with male people talking about their...
Clues in the title.
It could be one of those. So, yeah.
Well, he already
it's
is.
It's exciting times.
Yeah. Oh, right.
All right.
Done deal.
Sold.
Also, Boyd got papped on the red carpet.
Did you?
I
saw you posing on the red carpet, like a great big poser, with your hand
yes.
on your hip.
Oh, listen, you've got to do that, and you've got to do the pony leg and stuff like that.
The pony? What's a pony leg?
No, I'm just joking. It's that, you know, when you put your one foot up a little bit.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
okay.
Apparently so.
I've never tried that.
I've seen a lot of people do that.
Okay.
No, I bring it up because I wanted to apologise a little bit, because when we were on the red carpet, someone shouted out my name, and I was so, like, discombobulated anyway. I just sort of didn't really kind of twig what they was doing.
You're so used to it, really.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's far from that. So I was like, huh? And then they said Boyd. I was like, oh, they want me to get Boyd, yeah. So I shoved Boyd over and then took the piss out of him, saying, oh, all your fans are on the red carpet.
Mm.
And they were a pilot listener.
Yeah, and then and that's why they showed that for Kay, obviously, but she ignored them and just stood.
Yeah, because I didn't know
away.
What was going on. Yeah. So anyway.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
so shunned one of the listeners.
I had my photo taken. I had a selfie taken with a listener of
just one of his many podcast. Fans at BAFTA.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And then and then afterwards, we both sat on Gavin and Stacey tables. You were sat next to Rob Brydon.
Yes, I was in an Uncle Bryn Jason sandwich on that table.
Wow.
Incredible.
With Gavin and Gwen opposite me.
Yeah. And I was sat with next to Alison Steadman and Larry Lamb. Alison Steadman, a true legend.
Pamela.
Who I'm going to be mentioning in a minute when it comes to what we've been watching, actually, funnily enough. This is all very topical. And James Corden and Ruth Jones. Ruth Jones, who thankfully, as we'll get to in news, won an award.
I saw that.
Yes.
Did you speak to any other people of note
Did
to
I
promote speak? The podcast, obviously, in your position as ambassador for the podcast?
Yeah, with who?
We had a chat with Derm, didn't we?
You had a chat with Derm, yeah, Dermot.
I had a chat and a cuddle with Danny Dyer, the BAFTA-winning, award-winning.
He had his tash, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because has he started Rivals season
yes,
two
they
yet?
Yes, started on Monday filming. So
yes,
that's
they
exciting.
Just started, yeah. Mm.
Back in Rutland.
Exactly.
Ooh, James has been reading up.
Russell Tovey, I had a nice time with.
That doesn't count, your friends.
That's true. I had a lovely chat with Anthony Boyle, the actor who's in, among other things, he was in the American drama The Plot Against America, which was a David Simon show that we reviewed on the podcast.
Yes.
And was really good. And he's brilliant in it as a young Jewish chap. And I spoke to him about how I thought he did a very good job of being Jewish. And he seemed to appreciate
that. He got
that.
Your endorsement.
He got my full Jewish approval.
You'll be happy about that.
I was going to make a Jewish joke there, but I thought,
come on, we can't get you cancelled.
I am allowed to, because
yes,
I am, but
I know.
You know.
On a technicality.
On a technicality.
James and I can't do this pod without you.
No. Okay. Who else did I say hello to? I'm a producer of Supercell. I had a long chat with her. Can't remember her name. And sorry. But we talked about Supercell.
This is because by that stage at 11, 12 o'clock, he was absolutely shit-faced.
Really? A lot of Moet was there. A lot of Moet.
It wasn't. I was just trying to find an excuse.
What was it? It was Tattinger.
The sponsors.
Tattinger. Yeah, I love Tattinger. I can't remember. The rest is a blur. I can't remember.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed yourself. I'm glad you had a good time.
Thanks, James.
You know,
while I was
at home alone, you know, watching Stranger Things in my front room.
Did you even watch the BAFTAs?
Of course not.
See? I mean, this is what I'm talking about.
Excuse me, I'm not watching any party I'm not invited to. I'm just not doing it.
Do you watch it anyway?
No.
Okay, see, I've watched it every year and never been, so I was quite excited.
Mm. See? Maybe if you put more effort in.
Maybe if they invited me, I'd start watching. It's a chicken and egg situation
for you.
It really is a chicken and egg situation.
He's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's true. Also, like, and this is showing you how much I was enjoying Stranger Things, because I watched Stranger Things through to the end. I've finished season one now. But bearing in mind, I finished the season of Stranger Things despite Apple having given me the first quite a few numbers of the new series of Foundation. I had those available to me. I had Foundation episodes at the tips of my fingers, and I did not watch them because I'm saving them. I'm very excited to get into them. I'm thinking this weekend is going to be the time. I'm going to dive back into Foundation.
Oh God, his eyes are twinkling there.
I'm so excited. I am so excited. But yes, I finished Stranger Things. Really enjoyed season one of that. Will I be pressing on season two? Yes, I think I will. Yes, I think I will, but maybe Foundation first. So that was fun. That's what I've been watching. It's mainly Stranger Things. I did, of course, rewatch, the final block of Andor. Now, we have, obviously, we talked about this when we first reviewed
it. Talking about things I'm not invited to.
I knew this was going to come up.
Yeah,
it is true. We did do the finale spoiler special podcast. Sophie Petzl was once again back on, schooling us in all things Andor. She was fabulous. If you do subscribe to the Empire Spoiler Specials podcast, you can hear that now. But guess what? If you subscribe to Pilot Plus, you can also hear that now.
Wow.
Because I've put them on the Pilot Plus feed as well.
Oh my gosh. Do you know what? That is wonderful, because we had some in the inbox. We had a few emails about that.
Yeah.
Making a plea.
They were a lot of fun. We had Tony Gilroy on to talk about the final block and really the show as a whole. But those final three episodes, like that show is remarkable. And as we've said before, like, I had worries with the first block of that. The second block I thought was really solid. The third block is three of the best hours of TV I've ever seen. And the fourth block is almost as good as the third block. Not quite, but almost. Like, it's a fantastic send-off for that show. And Last of Us Andor. I don't know quite. I think I'm still Team Last of Us, but it's really fucking close.
Yeah, I mean, you're wrong.
They are such good shows, both of them.
I'll tell you this
one
thing. When it comes to the end of the year list, Andor will be above the Last of Us.
Kay has no horse in this race.
Yeah. So, do you know what? It's going to be who curries favour with me the most, who I back.
Oh, so yeah. We're going to have to solicit Kay's vote.
Corruption, thy name is Kay.
Yes. Yeah, and you know what my currency is, Patval.
So. Really? We're going to feed you cake in exchange for votes.
No. Well, snacks.
Okay. Well, we'll see. Well, you haven't seen all of The Last of Us, Body, obviously, because you were not given screeners because you weren't deemed important enough. But when you see the end of it, maybe you'll feel differently.
Do you know what? Funnily, you should say that, because I have got all the rest of the series.
Oh, have you now?
Yes, that's wiped the smile off his face.
Yeah, I just haven't got around to it yet.
I see. So, yeah. I see. Yeah. Okay.
I'm fair so happy.
There's only two
both.
More to go, right? Six and seven.
There are two more, yes.
Yeah, I mean, lazy on their part.
Have you finished with your watching list?
No, not quite.
Okay, go on.
I mean,
because I was ready. No, I locked
can't. Just pounce.
I kind of have, to be fair. Like, it was just Andor is the last thing, and it's magnificent. And if you haven't seen it, you should. And if you don't like Star Wars, you should still see it. Just saying.
Yeah, I endorse that.
Noted. I have finished watching Malpractice now. So
oh, have you? Oh. My yes. mum is watching Malpractice.
Oh my God.
I finished watching it as well.
The ending didn't disappoint. No notes. Grace Afuriata, amazing writer, and Tom Hughes. I know I keep on banging on about him, but very, very good. Mm. Also watched Welcome to Wrexham Season 3, Disney Plus. Binge that in anticipation for Series 4.
Are you a footy fan? You're not, are you?
No, well,
do you just like this show?
Yeah, shall I tell you why? I think it's the underdog story.
Mm.
Obviously, like Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney is the draw, you know, was the draw originally, because it was like, oh, these are Hollywood stars buying this football team. Wonder how that's going to go. And then I have got really invested in the team and the players, but also the fans. And that's what I like about it, because as much as it's about the football, it's about the backstories of these people, the local pub owner, et cetera, et cetera. And so I get really involved in it. But it is an emotional roller coaster. But now I'm excited for season four, which will have dropped by the time this episode of the podcast comes out. And the last thing I watched was Brett Goldstein, The Second Best Night of Your Life on Sky Comedy. As you know, I'm a Brett fan. Aren't we all? Yeah, but I hadn't ever seen a stand-up. So I only know him from, obviously, Ted Lasso and Shrinking, and I had never seen anything like of his stand-up comedy before. But I have to say, he's a funny guy. It was very funny, rude, dry, sense of humour. Would recommend.
I saw some clips from it on the socials, which I thought were very, very good. And I learned, let's just say, he added some terms to my vocabulary that had never been there before.
Like what?
He has a segment, I believe it's from the podcast, which is Bothersome Boners and Worrying Wide-Ons. And I had to look up the latter. I was like, I've never heard of that and I don't know what it is. And I've never heard of a wide-on? I've never heard that phrase used before. I am, not to put too fine a point on it, familiar with the mechanics, but I had never heard that phrase before in my life. And I was like, really? That's a thing?
Yeah.
Didn't know that was a phrase.
It's in Curb quite a lot.
Oh, well, that's why it doesn't turn up in Star Trek that much.
No, funnily enough, no. It would be a new type
Counselor Troy's got a massive white. No, it doesn't come up.
No.
Well, you should watch it. I think you'd like it.
You should write
your comedy
Brett
rules.
Goldstein.
No, I like stand-up.
Brett Goldstein is good friends with Mae Martin, you know, the brilliant Mae Martin, whose shows we loved on the Pilot TV podcast, and they'd done shows in live shows together. I want to see one of those.
Have you seen it?
Double Act Stand Up.
They do it in LA.
Well, I started watching. Yeah, they do. No, I have never seen one. I really want to see the two of them together doing.
Shall we go to LA?
I mean, what are you paying expenses?
They would expense it back, right?
We'll get part holiday. Why not?
Yeah.
We'll invite James as well.
Hey, me, Helen, and Chris did go to the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser in Florida.
If it's good enough for the goose,
yeah.
Okay.
Weren't you in bunk beds or something?
No, I was not. I was in a bunk bed. Chris got his own bed. Helen got her own bed. I was in a bunk bed. I was the child. They were the mum and dad.
Top or bottom?
I beg your pardon.
It's a very personal question at this stage.
No, I took the top bunk as it happens.
Really?
Yeah. Very much a top bunk person. I like the top bunk.
Okay, fine. Please.
You keep saying it. Please. Almost as if to
skip over
yourself.
It as fast as possible.
Well, no, I'm just saying because I'm quite tall. So, you know, you need to be able to get onto the top.
Okay, sure. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
And he got his lightsaber out as well.
Steady. Come on. Unbelievable. You're such children. Anything else you've been watching?
No, that's it.
I watched Malpractice as well. And I wanted to say how I think one of the best things about it was how fearlessly bold its attack it's on NHS trust
management
can be, because I thought that was really interesting how you know, and it must have been a slight, I don't know, she must have been careful to not make the cases covered in this drama like anything too real, because, you know, that could have landed
I think it's
in
probably
water.
An amalgamation of like different cases that she's experienced or heard about.
Yeah, but it was really, it's really powerful, that series, and they did a really good job, yeah. So I would fully, I think it's great, and I think it will come short or come back, because it is now the medical line of duty, which deserves to come back. A few times.
I need to watch that. I really do.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's really good, James.
Then the weekly Doctor Who catch up. By the time this goes out, it'll have been this big Saturday event, TV day on BBC One, because you've got the FA Cup final, which I'm sure we'll all be watching. Crystal Palace v Man City. Come on, Palace.
Is this because Arsenal aren't in the final?
Yes, it is. In this example, you're right. Yeah,
I'm surprised you haven't pulled out your drubbing again.
Then that's going to be followed, unless there's extra time and penalties, in which case it won't be on TV, it will just be on iPlayer.
Oh, this is the thing you mentioned. Yes. So hang on, so Doctor Who will not air?
No, it will. As long as the football doesn't go to extra time and penalties, it'll be fine.
But if it does, it won't air?
No, but it will be on iPlayer, and they'll say something like, we've had to drop Doctor Who from the live schedule or whatever, but you watch it on iPlayer. It'll be on iPlayer from Saturday morning anyway. But I've seen this episode. It is the Interstellar Song Contest. It is the Eurovision episode that Russell, in our interview with him, Russell Davies brilliantly talks about how, you know, he decided to do this, get this brilliant idea. It's written by Juno Dawson.
Is Rylan in it?
Rylan is in it.
Oh, classic.
And not only Rylan, and you think, Rylan's playing, they've, so this has gone out already, so this is not spoilers, unless you, month. I won't go into spoilers anyway, particularly.
Oh, God.
Boyd anyway, be Boyd.
But put it this way, Ryland is exhumed from being in, because it's set hundreds of years into the future, so he's been in cryogenic, you know, like frozen, basically.
As he would have wanted.
As he would have wanted, and then he's woken up, and that's how he fits into the story. And then Graham Norton's also in it as like a kind of Ellie, what's it called?
A hologram?
Hologram, yes, thank you. So it's got the full gamut of Eurovision stuff. But it is set in a world in the universe where all the different galaxies are taking part in the interstellar version of Eurovision. But what's interesting about it is that you think, oh, this is fun, and it is fun, and it's a great time, but suddenly it gets really, really quite dark and serious. And Ryland has to get involved in that a bit. It's really interesting. So he does act. He does act properly. And he's really good. And everyone's really good in it as well. Kadeef Kirwan's in it from Slow Horses.
Like him a lot.
Fantastic. And I love the episode. And it's another example of a brilliant, eventy, twisty episode, as I talked about to Russell in the interview. But the thing that's interesting is I haven't seen the ending yet, because very unusually for Doctor Who, they send out the screener this week, as they normally do. They send it out weekly. But the last scene is redacted from the thing. So there's a big twist that by now we will all know what it is. Who fans will know from Saturday morning onwards when it becomes available on iPlayer, what happens in the last scene. But it's a big reveal. And I have literally no idea that now, as we're recording this on Thursday, before it goes out, what the fuck it's going
to
be.
On Pilot Plus, you need to give us your verdict then.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm excited that there's a twist so big they've redacted it from this episode.
Or they just don't want you to know who won the contest.
Yeah, it must be that the UK won it.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe, yeah.
What? That is a science fiction concept.
Yeah, it really is, yeah. Unless it's Bucks Physicals. What?
That'd be amazing.
That song is featured in the show.
Yeah, don't talk about alcohol decay. It could have been tipped up in a hurry.
That's true. And finally, I got home last night from the screening of Mission Impossible 8.
The Final Reckoning.
The Final Reckoning. Yes. 3.5, 4 stars.
it's a film.
That's the film review section. Done. And I got home and I had two of the three things we're reviewing today still to watch, right? Two-hour-long shows still to watch. And I was flicking around. I was just, you know, having a little drink of, you know,
scotch,
a little bit of wine.
Did you?
Wow! Yeah.
Only because I happened to have an open bottle of wine in the fridge, like white wine.
So you just thought you'd neck it.
I had only one glass.
It's very rare. Anyway, I kicked back, thought I'll get on to
swigging out the bottle.
I'll get on. By the way, it's quite late because the Mission Impossible film was fucking 3 hours long.
Two hours and 40 minutes. Yeah.
Set the scene. What time was this?
About 10:30.
Is this a cry for help?
No. What I'm going on to say is, instead of watching either of the shows I still had to watch, I was flicking around and I happened on...
That sounds
on,
weird, sorry.
I was flicking around on the TV screen using the flip, okay? And I happened to stumble upon Alison Steadman, who I sat next to at the BAFTAs, as previously mentioned, because of her role in Gavin and Stacey, etc. She was on the Gavin and Stacey table. And she was talking about The Singing Detective.
Which
on
you
BBC
love.
4, which I love, one of my favourite shows of all time. And it was brilliant. And she's done this interview where she talks about she was in that show. And it's fascinating. She talked about the writer Dennis Potter and the director and what Michael Gambon, the star, was like. And then they started showing The Singing Detective straight afterwards from episode 1. And I haven't seen it for years. And it is one of my favourite shows of all time. And I've mentioned this before on this podcast, but this is a show that came out in 1986 on UK television. And in 1988... I took my friend Neil, who lives in New York, when I was in my year in America, on New Year's Eve, 1988, to see all episodes of The Singing Detective, 5 hours of it, in a cinema in New York. And that's what we did on New Year's Eve.
And rock and roll.
That's what TV nerd I was back then. And I watched, and it's still brilliant. It's absolutely stunningly good. It is a complete masterpiece. And what really struck me was, even though it's quite a small BBC budget, it was a BBC show, and obviously dated in various ways, but John Amiel, the director, did his very best to make it cinematic. And it is cinematic TV before any of this ever got started, before, you know, Twin Peaks, The Sopranos, all the shows we do, the Breaking Bad, everything, The Last of Us, Andor, everything. And it's properly cinematic in its own way. Genius television, one of the greatest things of all time. And I watched 2 episodes of it.
Oh, wow.
And by that, it was too late to watch it.
What time did you go to bed?
So I went to bed about, you know, 1, 1:30.
Is this leading into why you haven't watched the other two?
No, I watched them now. I watched one in the morning, and I watched one, and I watched the others I've covered. But I texted my friend Neil saying BBC is repeating the scenes. And he was like, "Oh my god, 1988, 1989, New Year's Eve." I was like, "Yep." And I dragged you to see it, but it was worth it because it was absolutely fucking brilliant.
But you're a professional, so you watch the shows anyway.
Yes, I watch the shows anyway. I've never not watched the shows.
I have a confession to make.
Oh, here we go. Let me guess.
James.
Hold on.
No, I know what it's going to be.
Hold it right there. Let me guess.
It'll be Nine Perfect Strangers.
No, I think it'll be Rematch.
Well, we'll find out when we get to the review section, won't we, Boydie? We'll find out.
Right, you're going to have to pay a penalty. No. I have yet to decide what that's going to be.
It might be the bombing because you might find that too distressing. In quotes.
We will see. Sophie Petzl has demanded that I watch Blue Lights. She says it's Andor in Northern Ireland.
That's brilliant. What a brilliant description. I'll steal that. You should watch it. It's brilliant. Yeah.
She has convinced me.
Now you remind me, we also spoke to a young actor from that show.
Did you?
Yeah. Who was a complete delight. Yeah. This Irish guy. Who's in it, yeah.
Okay, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Yes, I need to see that. But yes, it's one that Sophie was saying because we had her in to do the Andor spoiler specials that she was invited on, and you weren't. But we had her in to do it, and she was saying, must watch that.
Yeah.
So that has now bumped up to the top of the sofa list.
Didn't we review it on the show?
We did, yes, but I only watched the first episode of season one, and I watched the first episode of season two, and I have not watched the others, because it's just got lost on my sofa list. But I'm gonna bump it up now.
It's brilliant. It's like Line of Duty, but like in some ways even more... like authentic and no holds barred, and
Andor in Northern Ireland. There you go.
Yeah, right. Andor in Northern Ireland. Very good.
All right, that is what we've been watching. Time now for the listener question. Kay, what do we have?
Okay, so this message comes from Holly, who says,
Holly Willoughby?
Alas, no.
Okay.
Holly Illis.
Right.
Who says, awkward subject heading. Oh, because it was called Dying for Sex. And she said, but I've just finished watching this and wanted to address the Jenny Slate's slating. Oh, I love the whole
this
show.
Is me again, isn't it?
But honestly, I think Jenny Slate was exceptional as Nikki. Funny, uncompromising, heartbreaking. Basically, what I'm saying is, Boyd was wrong. But while I like her from episode one.
This listener.
I can understand how one might find her a bit grating in the pilot. So a question related to that is, are there any other characters / performances that you couldn't get on board with at first, but that ultimately really grew on you? Thank you, and keep up the good work. Crossing my fingers it leads to some Pat Val soon.
That's a very specific and quite difficult question, because it's not worst characters in great shows. It has to be someone you don't like and then learn to tolerate, I guess.
Yeah. What struck me was that in the early days of Only Fools and Horses, one of the greatest TV sitcoms of all time, obviously. I'm not sure if James has heard of it, but it was.
Have you watched any Only Fools?
Of course. Hasn't? I've seen loads of Only Fools and Horses.
Okay.
And remember when I was a child, before I lost my ability to find things funny, I enjoyed the likes of Fawlty Towers, Red Dwarf, Blackadder, Only Fools and Horses. I watched all sorts of little sitcoms. But I just don't so much now.
I remember thinking, because I watched, I think I must have watched it from day one. I remember thinking, this guy playing Del Boy is a bit annoying. I remember thinking that character's a bit annoying and a bit over the top and a bit, you know, maybe even silly, you know, in the James comedy sense. And then within like about two series of Only Fools, and it did. I think the early series of Only Fools are absolutely clearly not as great as it. The more it goes on, the greater it became, pretty much into the, you know, golden days of series 4 or 5, etc. And when there are slight Christmas specials every year. Anyway, quite soon I realised, and it may even have been to do with his performance. Maybe his performance was slightly tempered, I don't know. But then I soon realised that he's one of the greatest characters, TV characters, comedy characters of all time, and he is absolutely brilliant in it, David Jason. So that's what comes to my mind. Very modern and up to date.
Cutting edge reference.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I would say, it sounds mad, but Tracy Jordan on 30 Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Really irritated
that's a good
me at
example,
first.
Yeah.
And then he really, really grows on you as well. And actually, I had the same, and I'm desperately trying to avoid listing shows that we always talk about. So I'm not going to mention Joey from Friends.
Well, that's why I haven't mentioned Seinfeld.
Right, exactly.
Or anything.
But Tracy Jordan was one of those characters you're like, I can't get on with this character. But actually, he becomes one of the best parts of the show. So it's, you know, it often is with comedy characters like that. When they're quite in your face and full on, you think, oh, they're going to be quite grating. And then you're like, actually, they're just funny.
Mm.
Okay, so I've interpreted the question in a different way.
Oh, of course you have. So Kate uses this opportunity to answer whatever question she kind of feels like.
Yeah.
With only one answer, of course.
Yes.
By the way. Yeah. Wrong answer.
When I saw a clip of Derek, I didn't watch it at the time because I wrongly thought Gervais was taking the piss. Do you know what I mean? I thought, oh, is it going to be one of those too close to the bone mocking portrayal? And I came to it very late because I watched it after Afterlife because I wanted more Gervais in my life. I was like, oh, I've always avoided this show like the plague. And then I binged it and I absolutely loved it. And it might be one of my favourites of all his shows. And I thought the character of Derek was so well observed and was such a beautiful portrayal. And like, he's such a kind, loving character. It was completely the opposite of what I thought. So I think it kind of is answering the question.
Yeah, and that is answering. Yeah, I don't know how that isn't. In
yeah,
any
how
way.
Are you that's not interpreting the question? Yeah, that's exactly what the question was.
Because
you're trying to undermine your own perfectly acceptable answer.
Because I hadn't actually watched a full episode with him in. I just made a snap decision.
No, that's fine. Oh, yeah. I mean, look, you being judgmental is not a shock to anyone, so that's absolutely fine.
But, coming from you.
But this is the correct interpretation of the question, because like, if I said something like Sansa Stark, that would be fair because you have that reaction to her, but it's a deliberate, because that's her character growth arc. Like, she starts off as this privileged, prissy character, and she becomes this formidable woman, so she goes through personal growth and becomes a more interesting and sympathetic character. It's not that I find her less irritating, that's by design, whereas I think someone like Tracy Jordan or Derek or whatnot, it's your own personal tolerance that needs to be built up.
Correct.
Well, look at that. We're all in agreement. We've answered a question. Hooray.
Ends podcast.
I will, while we're dealing with queries from the listenership, I will call out Paul the wine guy, who is also Paul the grammar guy, I should point out. And Paul has written a few times to Pilot Plus to mention grammatical stuff. He takes issue with the interchangeable usage of obliged and obligated, which happens a lot on the Empire podcast, I think.
Obligated is just American, isn't it?
It's, I mean, yes, there's a fractionally different usage case, I think. But yes, it's much more likely to be used in America than it is in the UK. I will defend the use of obligated here in the UK, however, because I think obliged is fine, but obliged is a very British sounding word. It's very polite. Oh, I just felt obliged. Whereas obligated has a sense, it has like a hard consonant and it has a sense of like a weight to it. So when you say, I feel obligated to say this, I feel it feels stronger than saying, oh, I feel obliged to say this. Do you know what I mean? So I think I think there's a textural differentiation there that I'm latching
onto. Is he the same one that had to go at me for...
Always. Yes, I believe so.
What was my one again? I can't remember now.
So many, Boydie. It's hard to track.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There was one in particular that I
Was it the infer one?
Yeah. Oh, alluded to.
Alluded to. Yeah, that was it, yes. Yeah. You didn't allude it to. You fucking said it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm obligated to say that I said alluded to rather than I was obliged to say.
Yeah, it was allude and refer, I think, or something.
Referred to it, yes. I've referred to it now, again.
Oh, Lord, I'm obliged to move us on now.
Fair enough.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Okay, let us have this week's guest, and it is Pokerface creator Ryan Johnson, who allowed Jordan to talk to him about the show, only to be pulled almost inevitably, let's be honest, into discussions about Star Wars. So, Pokerface is, of course, streaming in its second series on Sky and Now, and now you get to hear from Ryan Johnson.
It is my absolute pleasure to welcome to the Pilot TV podcast the creator of Pokerface, Mr. Ryan Johnson. How are you today, man?
I'm doing great, Trent. How you doing, man?
I'm really good. I have mainlined, I think, 9 episodes of Poker Face Series 2 over the weekend.
Wow.
I got sent screeners on Friday night, and I spent most of my weekend otherwise occupied.
That's a lot of murder.
It's a lot of murder, and a lot of enjoyable murder. I feel like I can say enjoyable murder.
That's pretty sick, man. I would get help, but yeah, I get what you mean.
but congratulations on the second series. It is as good, if not even better than the first. And I'll be honest, when the show got renewed, there was a part of me that was like, I'm very excited for more of this, but also how do you outdo what you did the first time? It turns out the answer is 5 Cynthia Erivos in episode 1 of the second series. I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about how did Cynthia get on board, and then from a technical point of view, how do you direct 5 of the same actor all at once?
Yeah, I mean, it's still kind of a little miracle to me that Cynthia is in the episode. I mean, and also the reality is she did it literally in like her week and a half off between legs of the Wicked press tour. So it was absolutely bonkers. Like, she should have been sitting on the beach resting somewhere, but she came and did this insane role. And I had wanted to work with her for years. We had kind of met a few times and I really liked each other. And also I knew, you know, the type of actor that we needed who has the kind of toolbox to do something like this, especially in a 10-day TV schedule. And also on a TV budget, which means we didn't have a bunch of motion control stuff. And it's not like we could do a bunch of post effects work so we could shoot all of one character and then all of the next. We were literally setting up 3 cameras and then shooting one half of her conversation and then leaving the cameras with sandbags on them so nobody make sure nobody touched them. She goes off and does a makeup change, comes back and does the other half of the conversation. It was very low tech like that. And that all the credit for that goes to Cynthia, for her to be able to hold all that in her head and still move at that pace. It was kind of a miracle.
It's an incredible start to the series. And I do also have to just very quickly ask, the game is afoot as the title. That's your own, right? I'm assuming it's a good pun.
Is that what? Oh no, that was Laura Dealey, who's the writer of that episode. She actually came up with that title. She also came up with the foot thing. When she pitched it in the room, I think I was like, God, you already have like sextuplets to deal with. Do we really want to add in this other thing? And Laura is this extraordinary writer whose brain she's very different than Natasha, but she's similar in that her brain moves at hummingbird speed. And so she was able to kind of say, no, 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 I think we can do this. And we dug into it and the game was afoot.
Well, it's a great way to start the series. And I think something that I've really loved as a fan of the show and as a fan of murder mysteries and, you know, going back to Columbo, Diagnosis, Murder She Wrote, all of those kind of things, is that what I've noticed going from series 1 to series 2 of this is that what I thought might happen, which was that Charlie would spend all of this series on the run from the mob and it becomes a serialized story, without getting into spoiler territory, it kind of very quickly becomes apparent that's not what we're going to be doing. And instead, we're getting to spend more time with Charlie, getting to spend more time with that character and just getting to basically hang out with her. I wondered whether that was something that you'd sort of discussed with Natasha and the writer's room going into the series, and like where you were wanting to take Charlie getting to do a second round of episodes.
Yeah, it's something that came very kind of naturally in the course of being in the room. It wasn't like a big plan going into it. And part of it was just getting a few episodes in and sort of honestly just feeling kind of my shoulders sag a little when it got to the point of, okay, now the gun guys show up at the end and she has to start running again. Also, I kind of, as we got a few episodes into the season, I started looking towards the end of it, thinking of just repeating ourselves of, you know, it's chase, 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 and then a confrontation with the mob boss at the end of the season. The bigger thing, though, was once we kind of committed to it, I think it did really help the show, because it does take, in taking that external pressure off of Charlie, it puts it back on her. And the question of why can't she settle down? Why does she keep moving from place to place? And also it makes her interrogate each place, not as a hiding place, but as some place of, could I belong here? You know? And so it, in that way, it helps us kind of dig in even a little bit more.
Yeah, because I mean, in many ways, I mean, don't get me wrong, the mysteries are great, and I love the variety that you have in this series. In particular, the school episode with the gerbil is a real doozy, and really love the minor league baseball episode as well. It's a very good one. But as a genre fan and as someone that grew up watching a lot of Murder, She Wrote and Columbo with grandparents, with uncles and aunties, like I really love the way that it's almost as if the mysteries are just an excuse to get to hang out with Charlie and to get to hang out with the people that she meets along the way. Yeah. And I wondered, like, is that when you're making a how catch him rather than a who done it, is that something that you're sort of conscious of, is that you want this to be someone that we as viewers just want to hang out with?
Yeah, Jaron, you're 100% inside my brain. That's where this whole thing started, actually, is watching, binging Columbo over lockdown and feeling like, you know what, this is a hangout show. This is very much a hangout show. And being a fan of Natasha's and watching Russian Doll and feeling like this is a very rare bird here. This is somebody who has the charisma on screen, I think, to anchor a show like this, which goes beyond just skill as an actor or the notion of being a good on-screen detective. In a show like this, finding somebody who has what Peter Falk had, which is that magnetic thing of you wanting to come back and spend time with them every week. In a way, I think this very specific genre has more in common with the sitcom than it does like a Knives Out movie, for example. In that, really what you're coming back for with Magnum PI or with Rockford Files or with Columbo is because you want to hang out with that guy and you want to see, you want to hang out with that character and you want to see him win every week, you know? So no, man, or Moonlighting also. I mean, my wife and I have been rewatching Moonlighting and it's a great show, but the third act of the last act of every episode is almost like a toss away in terms of the solution of the crime. Typically, they just end it with a wacky chase scene where everyone falls down at the end and then the mystery is over. It's because they very intelligently realize we're showing up to hang out with these two characters. And yeah, the mystery is fun to kind of follow, but it's not like we're actually keeping score on a bingo card and really tracking and worrying about that. That's not what we're really there for. So yeah, man, you put your finger exactly on it.
Well, it's just something that really sticks with me because, you know, Natasha is such a great sort of magnetic screen presence and the show really does just feel like it serves as getting to hang out with her for, you know, 10-12 episodes. But I did also want to ask, because you mentioned there briefly Knives Out, and obviously these are two very different scale productions, different way of working on both, I would imagine, and also it's whodunit versus How Catchem. But I was wondering, like, for yourself as someone that is like a self-professed murder mystery lover and someone that, you know, is steeped in the books like Chandler and Hammett and Agatha Christie and all of those, do you have a preference for, like, when it comes to formulating the stories and discuss it, do you prefer to go for a whodunit? Do you prefer to go with a How Catchem? Or for you, is it the same ultimate thing that you're doing with both?
No, I very much prefer the How Catchem. I think it's a far superior engine for a movie, so much so that if you look at the first movie of Knives Out, I go to great lengths to kind of turn that movie into a How Catchem. I do it with sort of a feint at the beginning, but you'll with that, and also in a different way with Glass Onion, and you know, it's for me, I love whodunit so much, and I also fundamentally agree with Hitchcock that there's a fundamental weakness to the genre if you rely on clue gathering and the element of surprise as your engine. That's a pretty weak engine. The notion of he did it. You have to, and that's why I think the best whodunits and the best Christie does this, always finds an engine that is almost from another genre, whether it's with the ABC murder, she does a serial killer hunt, basically, you know, or, and then There Were None, it's like a slasher film, basically, you know, she was very good at kind of baking another engine in that's going to keep the reader engaged beyond clue gathering and the surprise at the end. I think that's essential to a done it. It's the reason why that's in this kind of magical genre of How Catchem that Levinson and Link kind of, you know, really honed with Columbo. There's this magical thing that works in exactly that way, where it's tension as opposed to surprise. And so I think it's a much stronger way of keeping the audience engaged.
Yeah, definitely. I'm personally on Team Howcatchum, and that's a lot of that's due to Columbo, and Pokerface has only reinforced that. It would be remiss of me not to have a real genre aficionado with me without asking this question that we've been asking with a few people we've interviewed lately. But yeah. if you were going to sit down and program like a back-to-back-to-back three-film murder mystery marathon for friends, I know that you dip your toe in different murder mystery waters. What would be like the three, if you wanted to show the scope of what a murder mystery can be, you have three films, what would the three be?
Boy, that's a great question. I mean, because it's either, first of all, it's weird how it's not that expansive a genre. It's, I mean, you have to kind of dig in. You go, but yeah, I mean, you can go back to like Green for Danger and like find stuff from, you know, the World War II era that was kind of doing it. But the reality is for me, it kind of, I guess I would start with Death on the Nile with Peter Ustinov as Poirot, because that is the kind of the reason I started doing. You know, I wrote Knives Out was my love of the genre started with Christie's books, but it also started watching that film and kind of the blend of humor and the all-star cast. And as a kid watching it with my parents, kind of from the video, you know, with a tape from the video store, that's kind of the essence of the experience that I wanted to tap back into. So number two, I mean, you could go with Last of Sheila, which is a really interesting, it's gotten more attention recently, thank God, but it's
I think Glass Onion had a lot to do with that, because I remember you saying at the time that Last of Sheila was like a, if you want to do some swatting up, Last of Sheila is a good one to go to.
Absolutely. I still from the best. I mean, it's first of all, it's Sondheim co-wrote it with Anthony Perkins, oddly, but he, you know, Sondheim, his roots in the mystery genre and his love of puzzles are just kind of legendary. Also, it's just, it, you know, it's a similar thing, but it's an all-star cast. It's a very clever mystery, but ultimately it's just fun seeing these characters bounce off of each other. It's just a fabulous film. I don't know if it would count as a, I guess it would count as a murder mystery. I would, one of the kind of subgenres of this that I am absolutely a nut for, and it's really a difficult genre, and I would at someday maybe I'll get up the guts to try and crack it, is the genre that Anthony Schaffer's Sleuth is kind of in the realm of, which is this very particular theatrical form that is kind of the 3 to 4 character, one set, 2 act thriller, with a big twist at the end of act one and then at the end of act two again. And Sleuth is the ultimate example of that. And I think the film version of it is absolutely brilliant. Michael Caine and Laurence Olivier, directed by Mankiewicz, I think. And just it's an extraordinary film, but also just that particular form. It's almost kind of like the margarita pizza of mysteries, because there's no fancy place to hide. You got two characters just fucking with each other, and you got it. And so every line has to count, and it all has to, you have to make it work. Death Trap is the other kind of great, you know, film example of that. And it kind of spawned a whole, you know, kind of a whole little subgenre at that time of theatrical mysteries that I wish would come back.
I wish so too. I've got one more question left. I could ask you so much more, but a question that I do want to ask, it would be remiss of me not to, is we're talking on the day after for you, but the day four is in the UK, that the last episode of Andor has just come out on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. Have you been watching Andor? How do you feel about Andor? Because for me, as someone whose favorite Star Wars is The Last Jedi, depending on the day that you ask me, I feel like there's so much thematic connective tissue between what Tony's doing with that show and what you did in terms of deconstructing the mythos and sort of doing the two sides of the same coin between resistance and First Order, rebellion and empire. So have you seen it? Do you love it?
I am saving up season two like a Christmas present. I haven't dove into it yet. I'm so excited. And it doesn't, so I'm trying to remain spoiler free. It doesn't surprise me at all. He's such a smart writer. And also he just, you know, from Rogue One and the first season of Andor, he's just got his pulse on something really unique, and or his finger on the pulse of something really unique and beautiful. And it's also just so beautifully written and so well executed. It's just such a pleasure to watch. So no spoilers. And I'm avoiding, of course, there's 1,000 think pieces out there right now about the political element of it, which seems very, I can't wait to dive into and see, because going back to, I mean, you know, all of Star Wars, but particularly the prequels, that's always been a massive a massive part of it. The when I was writing The Last Jedi, I remember sitting at a table with the, you know, kind of the Disney brain trust. I'm like, okay, we have to talk about the P word. We have to talk about politics because this is a big element of Star Wars. And it's not going to play a huge part in this movie, but I do think it's something that Star Wars at its best is never afraid of, you know?
No, well, on that note, talking about a brilliant Star Wars show from someone who made a brilliant Star Wars film and someone who made Poker Face, which is just one of my favorite comfort watches. Thank you so much for your time, man. Congratulations on the show. And I can't wait for Wake Up Dead Man. So,
thanks, John. Appreciate it.
That was Ryan Johnson. It is time for this week's news. What have we got, Boyd?
Well,
BAFTAs, by any chance?
Do you want to start the BAFTAs? Yeah, we could start. Let's just tell us what
shows from years past have won awards this week.
We'll just pick out a few highlights.
What were you most offended by?
A few surprises. I mean, there were some obvious winners. Jessica Gunning. I think Jessica Gunning winning Best Supporting Actress for Bay Reindeer, which by that jury, I was on that jury, by the way, I think she's the winningest actor/actress possibly ever, certainly win the years, because she has swept the ball.
She's won so many awards,
yeah. But she's still brilliant.
Well deserved.
Totally deserved it. Supporting actor, I really was thrilled that Arian Bacare from Mr. Loverman.
Shaba.
Exactly. Won that category. And he was up against Damian Lewis from Wolf Hall, I think was probably the favourite.
Mm.
Jonathan Pryce from Slow Horses. McKinley Belcher III, who was brilliant in Eric.
Looking fabulous on the night.
He did look brilliant, didn't he? In one of those suits, like showing off his...
Yeah,
body.
No one else could wear that.
No, well, there were a few people could. I remember Shooty Gatwell didn't wear a shirt. Like a
that's how I'd have gone. If I'd been invited, that's
insane.
How I'd have gone.
I was tempted to do that look. I thought, not this year.
100%.
Next year, maybe I'll do the look.
Pecs out, everything.
Yeah, just topless.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
In a thong.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Moving on.
Limited drama, unsurprisingly, was the 18-month-old Mr. Bates versus the post office.
A worthy winner.
It was a worthy winner. Scripted comedy. This is the category that Gavin and Stacey is not in. The nominees were Brassic, like season 6 or something, one of Kay's favourites. Goued, which was a very nice show, but I'm sorry, it's not Gavin and Stacey. Ludwig, which is barely even a comedy, right? And Alma's Not Normal, which won. And Alma's Not Normal has been sweeping up the comedy categories a lot. And that it was a brilliant show. I love that show. But come on, for Gavin and Stacey not to be in that 4 is absolutely bonkers. Then we have male performance in the comedy, Danny Dyer, your favourite.
Yes.
Okay. Female performance at the comedy, thankfully, Ruth Jones. This is the only award that Gavin and Stacey won on the night. They were nominated in the P&O Ferries Moment of the Year thing, which we were both jurors on that panel.
Mm.
And it was in the shortlist, Gavin and Stacey, but it lost out to Strictly Moment with
Chris
McCausland.
It was no Micro Wavé.
It was no Micro Wavé either. Micro Wavé was nominated a couple of years ago, in case you forgot.
Oh, I know. He always brings it up. He loves saying it.
Yeah. But Ruth Jones was brilliant. Absolutely thrilled. She made a brilliant speech. I was on the table afterwards with her, thank God. And she was like absolutely delighted. And she said, Holt Carson said, you know, this is up for all of us. This is recognition for all of us. I think it is. I think that's fair. I'm avoiding the reality show category.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
James.
Although I just want to quickly say about that. I was shocked that The Traitor didn't win that.
Same.
The jury murder trial.
Yeah, that was a very interesting show, that jury.
Can I say something about The Traitors?
Yes.
There is a part of me, despite myself, that wants to watch Celebrity Traitors.
Yeah, I was going to come to that next.
Because there are so many good people in it.
We'll get to that in a minute. The cast was revealed this week. Yeah, we'll get your take on that. But anyway, I'll quickly wrap it. International, Shogun won, quite rightly.
Yes.
I think you'd all be in favour of that. But beating True Detective, Say Nothing, Colin from Accounts, they were there.
Star of the show.
My favourite, Would I Lie to You, rightly won the entertainment category.
I think,
go on.
Entertainment performance, I was surprised that either Claudia didn't win for The Traitors or Rom and Rob for Rob versus Romesh.
And what did win?
Joe Lycett, who is good.
I agree with you.
I was surprised by that.
And drama series, this is Blue Lights. So you were talking about how Sophie Petzl says you should be watching it. She's quite right.
And we're in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I did speak to one of the young cast who was absolutely thrilled. And that beat Sherwood, which I love, Supercell, which we loved, and Wolf Hall, which we were confused about because we didn't know whether one character was a ghost or not.
And also in the soap category, EastEnders triumphed. I was delighted about that.
Finally, the big awards of the night, the last two awards were for leading actor and leading actress. Marisa Abella won for industry, which I think was a bit of a surprise, because I would say Anna Maxwell-Martin.
Or Monica Dolan.
Or Monica Dolan were probably favourites for that. Anna Maxwell-Martin for that Until I Kill You true crime thing, which she was amazing in. Billy Piper was nominated for Scoop, brilliant. Lola Pettigrew was nominated for Say Nothing, brilliant. And Sharon D. Clarke in Mr. Loverman.
Oh, yeah. Chopper.
Thank you. And finally, in the lead, the best award of the night for me, Lenny James did win for Mr. Loverman.
Yes, and he is fantastic.
He's so moved as well.
This list, he was so moved because he beat David Tennant for Rivals, Gary Oldman for Slow Horses, Martin Freeman for The Responder, which is another show that you should watch, Richard Gadd for Baby Reindeer, and Toby Jones for Mr. Bates versus Bates. What a lineup.
I mean, that's heavyweight category. I don't fancy trying to set odds for that category, but yeah, exactly. I'm glad Lenny won it. I am.
Yeah,
he was outstanding,
absolutely brilliant. Yeah, he was delighted. So that's the BAFTAs.
That was the BAFTAs that I wasn't invited to. Right. Any other news?
Yes.
Well, so Traitors.
Oh yes, Traitors. Go on, Kay, take it away.
No. You talk about the Traitors because I had some Bear news.
Oh.
The Bear's got a date.
He does have a date.
Yes.
You said it now.
Yeah, so Thursday the 26th of June, all 10 episodes will be available on Disney Plus.
So we won't be doing that weekly on Pilot Plus. Maybe we'll do an all-in-one, an all-you-can-eat buffet spoiler special.
Mm.
Maybe
we'll have it catered. Food. Yes.
Maybe you should buy cake, Kay, and bring it
to our spoiler special. Not until we deserve it, James. You know the
we
rules.
We always deserve
but
it.
But we should get takeout or something.
All right, fine. Kay's buying us takeout, Boydie. It's very exciting.
I'm excited,
The freelance in the room will do that.
That's right.
Sure.
Yeah, see? Look, she said it. She can pay for it with all her Q&A bucks.
Absolutely, yeah.
Don't wind him up.
Yeah. Maybe bring some marmalade sandwiches. That's a different bear.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That's good.
Wow.
Do you know what my favourite part of that was? The self-congratulations.
Yeah. I mean, like that.
Go on, tell us about the Traitors.
The Traitors, yes. So they revealed this week, after lots of rumours, they just finished filming it, I believe, as well. And the list is incredible, it has to be said. Tom Daly.
Tick.
Charlotte Church.
Yeah, also good signing.
Jonathan Ross. Stephen Fry.
He's going to be a traitor.
There is a content creator who I'd never heard of in it, and this is Nico Omilana, who apparently has got hundreds of millions of followers, or a lot of followers. Alan Carr.
Amazing.
Oh, legend.
Amazing.
Actress Ruth Codd, who is in the How to Train Your Dragon film coming out very soon. Joe Marler, former rugby player, who is a big social media star. Paloma Faith, pop music fame. Kat Burns, who's also a singer. Lucy Beaumont, the brilliant comedian. David Olusoga, the excellent historian and TV documentarist. Nick Mohammed,
amazing
legend. Celia Imrie,
I'm so excited about her.
Kate Garraway, legend. Claire Balding,
Balders.
Tamika Empson from EastEnders.
Oh, I love
Mark Bonner, the actor, and Joe Wilkinson, the excellent.
I'm excited for Joe as well, actually.
He was in Lost One Laughing.
Yeah, he was very funny.
Yeah. Who's brilliant in that?
This adds an entirely different layer to the mechanics of the show, because the whole point of Traitors, as is my understanding, not that I watch it, is that people can create a persona and present themselves however they want. All of these people having public personas means people will go in with pre-existing preconceptions of who they are and how they should behave.
Mm,
and
even better,
it's going to be fascinating.
Mm. It's going to be brilliant. I'm so excited about Celia.
Is it because she was in The Phantom Menace? Is that why you're excited?
No, because as you know, she was in Better Things, which I'm obsessed with.
Well, also, the thing she really became famous for back in the day was her Victoria Wood appearances, where she was a brilliant... she was in Dinner Ladies, she was...
was she in Calendar Girls? Have I made that up?
I think she probably was, yeah. Mm. I'm pretty sure.
Anyway, it's going to be great. I can't wait.
Yeah. It's very exciting, but we will have to wait, because it's not going to be on until autumn.
Sigh.
Well, maybe that's something we can cover on Pilot Plus.
Wow.
Who knows?
Revolution.
Who knows? As long as there isn't some kind of revolution from the subscribers. Anything else?
Yeah, talking of Sharon D. Clarke, we've got the announcement that Ellis, you know, her Channel 5 crime drama, first black solo female-led detective series, is coming back for a second series. So that's exciting.
Can I tell you an interesting thing about Sharon D. Clarke?
Please do.
Yeah.
She's in The Singing Detective.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Everything comes back to The Singing Detective.
She's a young nurse in The Singing Detective. Yeah, incredible. Yeah, I was like, I recognise her, and it's Shandy Clark.
God, it's like, yeah. This is so cohesive.
Yeah,
extraordinary.
Unusual scenes for us. Not just some random stuff we've thrown together. Brilliant.
Yeah. The funniest story of the week, though, was that Warner Brothers Discovery, the media giant, the TV media giant, has decided to rename Max,
their
streaming service, HBO Max. And let me remind you that this was originally called HBO Max.
It's almost like dropping HBO as a brand name, a kind of globally recognized, synonymous with quality brand name for a generic noun.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But apparently they did it in a very self-aware, jokey way, and the head of the whole thing kind of like apologetically kind of said, I've still got loads of HBO Max stuff, like marketing gear back when we changed the name.
That's fine.
It kept it all in his drawer and he brought it out again. Everyone laughed and he made a big kind of like apologetic joke.
I feel obligated at this point to say that when I said Max was a noun, I meant a proper noun,
oh
like
my God,
a name.
In my head,
as opposed to
in my head, I was thinking it's not a noun.
I meant a proper noun. I was like, but the thing is, when I say I could imagine just Paul sitting there going, "It's not a fucking noun. Max is not a noun. That's an adjective."
I wish I had said it. In my head, I was like, "No, it's a proper noun." But I thought, "No, James knows best."
Yeah, it's a proper noun.
Just shows me.
Sorry, Paul. I apologize. I'm obligated to apologize.
Maybe we should do our own stunt rebranding. So we'll. Next week be Pilot, and then we'll flip flop.
And Pilot plus Max,
yeah, five. It's like five's gone from
Pilot
Channel
OD,
five, C5,
back to
five.
Channel.
It's now just five.
Yeah. Didn't it
was
go back
Channel,
to Channel
5, then wasn't it the word 5?
Yes.
Then it was Channel
right.
5 again, and now it's the numeral 5.
The numeral 5.
Yeah. And then 4OD became all four, 4, and it's now just Channel 4?
No, it's always 4OD.
No, Channel 4. And the U, don't forget all the U ones. You and Dave, you and...
But is it you and Dave, or is it... But you and Dave, didn't Dave start out as like UKG, whatever it was?
Oh, UKTV.
Then that was Dave, and now it's you and Dave.
And the catch-up channel for Dave is Dave. Dave Javu.
Oh, but just stop that. I mean,
do you know
what?
Do you know what? Oh my God, it's been going for years.
I respect that pun.
I think they only created the catch up service. Dave Javu.
How did I not know that?
Yeah. That's great.
Okay, I love that. That's fabulous. Look, The Diplomat's coming back, and that's very, very exciting. Yes. That has been renewed. Bridgerton is coming back as well, if that was ever in doubt. What else has been renewed? The Four Seasons has come back for a second series. I could not care less.
Quite rightly. Shut up, you're wrong.
Forever, which I also didn't love, is coming back for a second season on Netflix too.
Just a list of shows that James didn't like.
That's true.
Back. I wonder... I wonder why James isn't the head of it.
Yeah, Netflix, don't listen to me. I think we've established that. Very excited Diplomat's coming back though.
Actually, James, you missed some very important Netflix news, which is exciting for any Schitt's Creek fan, which is that Dan Levy and Rachel Sennett have created a new comedy series. Levy will star in it alongside Taylor Ortega, who was in The Four Seasons, and also Laurie Metcalf. And apparently, according to the official synopsis, it's about two deeply incapable siblings, played by Levy and Ortega, who are blackmailed into the world of organised crime. So, sounds good. Anything that Dan Levy
is great.
I love
genuinely
Dan
great.
Yeah. And also Laurie Metcalf, so.
Yeah.
I am very excited about that.
There is other news. There have been trailers. There's been a Peacemaker thing. But it's very late in the day. I'm super tired. So I'm going to say...
He himself needs a pacemaker.
Listeners, that's the sound of our host shutting us down. I mean, I'm in favour of it,
I'm usually the person who shuts
us down. I'm not saying that this is literally my sixth consecutive hour of podcasting today.
Whose fault is that? Yours.
But I am flagging ever slightly.
Oh, yeah, his eyes are red, look. He's looking even more like George from Rainbow than
I'm slightly delirious, genuinely. It's been quite the day.
Okay, let's move on.
But let's move on to this week's reviews, one of which I haven't seen, but we'll get to
this is exciting. Which one?
Yeah.
Which one?
Let's put a bet on. I am saying it's Pan Am.
I think it's the chess one. I think it's
Rematch. Okay.
Right. Well, first up this week, we have Rematch on Disney Plus. This is a mini series about the 1997 match and rematch between chess grandmaster Garry Kasparov and Deep Blue, which was IBM's AI chess computer. Queen's Gambit meets Terminator 2, then, if you will. This stars Christian Cooke as the chess wizard and a big black box the size of a phone booth as Deep Blue. This is a show, it has to be said, which features what might
be... This is a show.
Correct.
But I'm saying this is a show that features what might be the most cringy social introduction of all time. And I say this knowing that at least a handful of mine are contenders for that particular crown. Boydie, as our very own supercomputer, let's hear your thoughts. Boydie to King's Bishop 3, is what I'm saying.
Is that the scene where the nerdy guy...
explains why he's called PC.
Yeah.
I believe I died a thousand deaths in that scene.
He is the best character. Yeah, so the guy who programs Deep Blue...
The guy who created Deep Blue.
He is really entertaining and interesting and funny, and he's like a self-aware super nerd. And he's the one who has to kind of move the pieces for the computer, and he interacts with the computer with Deep Blue, which is literally blue, by the way. I thought it was interesting.
It's that kind of attention to detail that we've come to really appreciate from Disney Plus.
And then there's another bit where he's dancing away to some music as well whilst dealing with Big Blue. That's another thing.
That's a different show.
And he's dancing around and someone comes in and sees he's just dancing to himself. He's really sweet and interesting and engaging. Unlike Garry Kasparov, who I found a bit of an empty presence in this show, weirdly. So Christian Cook plays, and Christian Cook's perfectly good in the role. I don't think it's his fault. I think it's the script. Christian Cook, I'm most famous for me for being in Cemetery Junction, which is Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant's film. I think it's the only film they did together, and what I really liked. It was really good. And I've got a little cameo in it with a wig on,
what?
By the way. Yes.
What?
Don't you remember that?
We've got to find that picture.
Yeah, I did a set visit, and they put me in a wig and shoved me
what
in the background.
What color was your wig? And was it a mullet?
It's not really, it's like a full on, quite 70s, 80s-ish wig. It's quite incredible.
I'm sure I've said this on this podcast before. Did I tell you that I was nearly Hitman, Agent 47?
No.
So I was on a set visit for the first Agent 47 for Timothy Oliphant, is obviously in. Timothy Oliphant of the fantastic hair, who was bald in it.
Yeah.
And they thought he was second unit stuff. They were doing a car chase bit. And they were like, oh, we could put you in the car and you could be Agent 47 in the car and for the thing, and I was like, oh fuck yes, and then someone went no, for insurance reasons we absolutely cannot do that.
Wow.
And so it didn't happen. There was a second where they were talking about, oh, we could maybe put you in the car, and they couldn't. So it's a less good story, I'll grant you.
So Boyd had a cameo and nearly
it was talked about.
So Christian Cook, he was in that. That's what he's most famous for, as far as I'm concerned. And he plays Garry Kasparov. Is that how you pronounced it?
Kasparov, I believe, is how he pronounces it.
But he's not. You kind of see him getting prepared to take on. So this is all about how he took on the computer, the IBM computer, in a challenge, just to say, you know, is a human chess player,
man versus
the best
machine.
Chess player in the world, better than the kid's computer. And it's an interesting story. But I just found they hadn't really particularly given him much of a character. So, and this is only the first episode, by the way, that I watched. And I think there's six-parter, sorry. So there's five more, which is quite a lot to go. And you see him interacting with his mother, and his mother's kind of telling him what to do, and he's just kind of acquiesces. And
there's no emotional through lines, right?
And he's a bit short with some people. He's like, you know, when it comes to a hotel, and he's like, yeah, whatever. And so he's like the borderline, you know, kind of showing him to be a bit kind of self-absorbed or whatever. But it's almost like they're holding back somehow a little bit for me. And because, of course, he is still alive, Garry Kasparov, very much. So I wonder whether they're slightly hampered by not wanting to give you a full no-holds-barred. And I'm not saying he's a horrible person or anything. I'm just saying they're almost like, almost implying that he was a bit, you know, self-absorbed and all geniuses.
Did you want more depth to him?
I wanted more depth to him. I wanted more of a character in the middle of this whole story. Just what was he like? And maybe they'll do more of that as it goes on. Maybe I'm expecting too much for an opening episode, which has to establish the scene, etc., and all the ideas behind it. But that was my main critique. It's perfectly decent, but it's absolutely not The Queen's Gambit, and I think it does suffer a little bit. I was reading up on it. I was thinking, is this a show that was made in the aftermath of The Queen's Gambit, which was one of the most acclaimed limited series of a few years ago, right, on Netflix? It was brilliant, and that was obviously very chess based. But apparently, according to the creator of this series, he had the idea before Queen's Gambit, but that did help get finance for this show, and you can sense that, you know, chess based stuff has been more easily, you know, it's easier for them to make shows about with the chess background now than before the Queen's Gambit. There was a BBC Two show recently hosted by Sue Perkins all about chess. Chess is hot, guys, but I'm not sure this show is going to entice people to watch it, shall we say.
Okay, you do not look enticed.
No, I think it could have been a one-off drama. I found it quite boring. And yeah. I really enjoyed The Queen's Gambit. I just wasn't invested in this story. And I think there's only so, you know, watching a computer generate a billion different moves is only so interesting, right? You can watch it for a couple of scenes and after a while you're like, because I don't know, I didn't feel the sense of jeopardy. So I didn't care about the outcome. I didn't really particularly care about him. And I just felt like it didn't have the same production values or appeal as The Queen's Gambit. Which was also set in the 80s. So
well, this is 90s, but yeah.
I thought this was, didn't this, oh yes, you're right, sorry, yeah. But whereas The Queen's Gambit won 11 Primetime Emmys and 2 Golden Globes, I don't think this will
absolutely
be.
Absolutely not, no. Yeah, no, I agree. It's almost like, that's a good point actually, it's almost like not a big deal enough to warrant a 6-hour miniseries. No.
It's really interesting. I thought this was great.
Oh, what?
And I got really into it for all of the reasons you didn't like it. Like, I thought Kasparov was a great character. I really liked how focused and intense and just like, and kind of an asshole, because for him, nothing exists off the chessboard. That is his whole existence, is his board. And his mother facilitates that kind of behavior. And he behaves like he is a kind of a rock star, because that's essentially how he was treated. And him going up against this machine, and partly because it is a machine, like, in fact, like, I was so tense. I thought they did such a good job, in the same way that The Queen's Gambit did, of making you really care about the outcome of a chess match. And especially because it's not one match, it's 6 that they have, initially at least. And it's like, you know, he loses the first one. And it's just like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? And then it's like how it all plays out. And I made a point of obviously not looking historically what happened. I did not know what had happened historically in either the initial encounter or the rematch. But I got really into it. And then I got into PC struggles to like, okay, we're going to have this rematch with Kasparov. So we need to upgrade Big Blue. Big Blue has to be, is it Big Blue or Deep Blue? I've forgotten.
Deep Blue,
not Big Blue. Big Blue is a pawn.
I made that mistake.
yeah. So Deep Blue, it's got to be faster. It's got to be, it's computing however many millions of moves a second. And I don't know, I just got really sucked in by the whole thing. The only thing I can't get my head around is, because like you, Bordy, I watched the very first episode, is a lot of what I assume is the narrative is covered in the first episode. Almost so that I feel like at least half of the story has been told at this point.
That's what I'm saying. It could be a one-off drama or a three-part.
Or a film. Like, yeah. I don't. And so I'm not quite sure what the remaining 5 hours are going to do.
Well, indeed.
So
yes.
I'm very confused.
That is the question.
I'm sure there's stuff going to happen, but I don't understand what it is.
Now they bring IBM in and you meet the... I thought that stuff was quite interesting. And I think there's more on that. I think there's more on IBM's issues and, you know, how they use this to boost their brand, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there's a lot of IBM-based stuff.
I'm less
enthralled
by the IBM share price.
Yeah,
right. So I've got to be honest. But yeah, the Kasparov and the actual chessness of it really did get me.
James, how did you feel about the CGI in the back of the car, when they're in the car?
I'm trying to think, do you mean when they're going through New York?
Yeah. Every time they're in the car, I thought it was really poor. And I never used to pick up on this stuff, and I wondered how you
I didn't flag it, but I think I'm so used to car scenes having those sort of like dodgy superimposed
green
backgrounds.
Screen,
don't register
I thought it was
anymore.
A bonding moment for us, but not.
Yeah, no, I just, they're all like that, so I'm like,
we're
well.
All on the lookout for bad VFX.
No, I do now really notice when the opposite is true. Like when they actually do a practical car scene, I always really, always flags me, they're actually in a car, how exciting. I like that.
You should flag that in your reviews.
I should, always from now on.
How do you know he doesn't?
Yeah.
Well, because I've never heard him say it.
Oh, I mean, I thought you meant his reviews in Empire.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's in the ones he's saying to us right now.
Checkmate then for rematch, although it does air on Disney Plus. When, Boydie?
Oh, you're going to ask me when?
I am going to ask you when.
I think I've failed to.
Boyd cares so little about this show, he doesn't even know when it's on.
Job.
Let me just...
Yeah, honestly.
I don't remember even covering it. Sorry, hold on.
21st of May.
Yes, it is indeed. Rematch airs on the 21st of May on Disney Plus. Next up this week, we have season 2 of 9 Perfect Strangers on Prime Video, which returns us to the world of wellness. Or rather, I'm assuming it does, because I haven't actually seen it. In my defense, the screener for this arrived exceptionally late, and then I couldn't get it to work. And then I had 3 hours of Andor to watch, and I was like, I'm sorry, it's just, I can't be doing this now.
You couldn't get it to work?
No, I couldn't get it to work. I don't know why. So we got sent links, but it didn't appear in my account, and I couldn't figure out why, and I had neither time nor inclination to pursue it. So.
Wow. I think it's because it wasn't in an account. You just click the link.
Well, I'm not going to bore everyone listening with the internet.
Listen, what we've done is unpicked his lies. It's fine.
All right, anyway. Seeing as you have seen it, do you want to bring us up to speed?
Yeah, sure.
Showing off, having actually seen it and everything.
God, you're such a swat.
Yeah, you've watched the shows we're reviewing and everything.
I mean, what the
Don't turn on me. Yes, so this is series 2.
This is why you get invited to the BAFTAs, by the way. It's this attention to detail, really. Professionalism.
Yeah. Nicole Kidman once again plays Masha. I'm not going to try and say her surname. She's a terrifying wellness guru who is back. She uses psychedelic therapy on her clients. And I won't ruin the first series, but it's quite intense. And as I said, she is a terrifying guru who believes she knows best how to make people feel better about the trauma they've experienced, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, this time round, she's got a new place to have her sort of well-being retreats, and that is in the Austrian Alps. And she's got a new set of rich clients who want to experience her psychedelic therapy. So we have the thing about this series. So I watched the first, I wasn't that impressed by the first series. I watched it because I like Leanne Moriarty.
Oh, you watched it all?
No, I didn't finish it. I watched it to review it on here.
So when you say, I watched it, you mean you watched the first episode?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, the verb to watch, I watched it. I watched a couple of episodes.
Just because you said you watched it because you like Leanne Moriarty, instead of I watched it because I was actually forced to for my job. It's fine, carry on.
Brilliant.
I watched it. I watched some of it. Mm-hmm. And and I didn't finish it because I didn't think it was as good as... What was her other series that I loved?
Big Little Lies.
That's Big Little Lies, yeah.
It's no Big Little Lies. But anyway, I think this time around, what it does really well is because it's got a great cast. So Christine Baranski is in this with Annie Murphy. They're playing a mother and daughter combo who have a fractious relationship. We also have a nun called Sister Agnes. Murray Bartlett is in it as a man who is very stressed about losing his luggage. Henry Golding plays a son of a rich billionaire who's meant to be on the trip, played by Mark Strong, but hasn't shown up yet in this first episode. And also there's a musician couple. The character names Wolfie and Tina, who I'm using. And yeah, so I really enjoyed this first episode. It kind of sets the scene. It reminds us of who Masha is. And then has kind of like an introduction to these the clients who undoubtedly are going to go on a wild ride as they experience all of Masha's weird therapies and stuff like that. So I'm very intrigued by it and I enjoyed the first episode. And as always, it's very glossy and luxe looking. But yeah, Christine Baranski, I love. And obviously Annie Murphy from Schitt's Creek. So I think the cast is a big draw.
And Murray Bartlett.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Mm. White Lotus.
You know how we all kind of, well, a lot of us speculated when The White Lotus comes along each time, what would it be like? Because each series of The White Lotus is in a different location. And we think, what would it be like if they did it in a chilly, cold, snowy location? Now you know. Because here is season 2 of the show that is even more like The White Lotus now, I felt, in its second series than the first series. The first series, from memory, came along quite soon after The White Lotus did. And it was a bit like there were two huge, star-studded, beautifully made prestige TV things about rich, wealthy, entitled people gathering in a resort and interacting with each other and being selfish and self-absorbed and exploitative of the people who worked in the various resorts / hotels. And this, I have to say, and I like you, watched 9 episodes. I think I watched more than you do. I think I watched till about halfway through. I think there were like 7 or 8 episodes. And it just kind of, it was just too long. It didn't have enough stuff going on to sustain a whole series. And just kind of petered out for me. And that's why I didn't watch it to the end. I feel already... But I did like, I remember really liking the first couple of episodes that were reviewed on here, etc. And as you say, the production values are fantastic. It looks great. I think this is even better, the first episode, than the premiere of series one. And it is partly, you're right, the cast is brilliant. I mean, Murray Bartlett transferring himself from being on the staff of the White Lotus to being a customer who does a brilliant thing, and I'm not going to give away the joke, but he does a brilliant thing with his luggage in the beginning of this episode that I thought was very funny and very well handled. It's not, I'm not saying it's like groundbreaking bit of jokey stuff,
but it's
still really well done. And he's great. He's not only like furious about his luggage, he's furious about everything, clearly. Mm. He has anger issues.
He's uptight.
He's very uptight. He's very funny. As you say, Christine Baranski is brilliant as soon as you see her with a hot young dude. She's brought a lot.
Matteo,
who her own daughter, played by Annie Murphy, dismisses as being a rent boy, basically, a prostitute. You've got Henry Golding, as you mentioned, as the son of the billionaire. Now, can I say, though, I love Mark Strong, and I'm already excited to see what he does with this character, but in the bigger picture, we might have to have a moratorium on billionaire characters in TV dramas, because there have been a lot. And this is a little bit like, you haven't watched it, James, but it's a little bit like A Murder at the End of the World meets The White Lotus in the way that it's all being set up and it's all in a snowy location.
That's such a great comparison.
Yeah, and there's a billionaire character coming along to you know, shake things up. But what I also thought about this was I got slightly fed up with Nicole Kidman's performance as the main character in season one. I think, I don't know what she's done in this one, and I almost feel I want to go back and rewatch season one to see. She's toned it down a bit. It feels that way to me anyway. So I think I enjoyed her in this as well, playing the crazed Russian wellness person. And they do a clever little opening whereby they kind of do a little bit of a recap of what happened, but because she's interviewed at a big event about what she does, a big wellness event and stuff. And I thought that was funny and interesting and quite cleverly done. It looks brilliant. Like, they've used the locale. Like, this massive hotel place is stunning. And then there are these, like, bridges.
I liked it when they got the ski lift up.
Yeah, the ski lift scene is fantastic. So I think it feels like a bit of a step up from series one to me already.
Elevated.
And
definitely.
if they manage to sustain the plotting, and if they work harder, I think, at bringing the characters' interactions together and making them slightly more compelling than they were in series one, I think it could be, I could really enjoy it. I think it could be like, I think, because I remember when this was recommissioned, I think I remember saying on this very podcast, I was like, why have they bothered? Because, you know, the first series was adapted from Leon Moriarty novel. I'm not sure there's much more to say. It was fine, but it did peter out. Well, I think actually, from judging from the first episode, I think they've done a really good job of justifying recommissioning it, because I'm enjoying it.
I think that's mainly down to the fact that the characters this time are just more interesting.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Completely. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Like the musicians, there's these two musicians, and one of them played by
Wolfie.
King Princess, who is an actual singer-songwriter.
That's her stage name, I think.
That's her stage name, yeah. She doesn't want to use the piano, and there's a piano in a room, and these two girlfriends are like, oh my God, we have to sort of get rid of the piano. Can you imagine like that level of entitlement where you arrive at the most lavish, lush hotel, and you've got a massive room, massive suite. There's a piano in there, so you're furious because they've
got
a fucking piano.
That's what we have to do sometimes when Boyd walks into the studio and he decides he doesn't like a certain colour, and we're like, oh God, we have to repaint.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. Oh, I didn't mention Dolly De Leon's in it. From, have you seen Triangle of Sadness, the film? She is the star of that film. She's absolutely brilliant.
Who's she
playing
this?
She is the
The nun. Oh, I liked her.
She's the nun. Yeah, she's fantastic. Yeah, the mysterious nun, shall we say? So I'm really loving it. Yeah, and you, I think you'd like it. I think you need to watch it.
Well, we'll never know.
All you have to do is just click on that link already.
Yeah, that's
unbelievable.
I'm sorry, Boydie. So you missed it.
So was it that it didn't appear in your account, or you just thought, I'm not going to watch it because I don't want to watch it?
It did not appear.
It could have been a candidate for Spoiler Special Chat, but no, you've...
I think it could.
I think they're showing it weekly rather than...
Also, you really have just exposed yourself, not literally, with your whole...
Good job we're not filming this.
I don't know what's happening below the desk, but...
with your whole, it didn't appear in my account thing.
Yeah, it didn't appear in my account.
Maybe because it was a click-through link.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? We'll never find out. Nine Perfect Strangers then, which is on Prime Video when?
It's on Prime Video on Wednesday, the 22nd of May, 2025.
Finally, this week we have The Bombing of Pan Am 103 on BBC One, and this is a miniseries that stars Connor Swindells, Merritt Weaver, Eddie Marsan, Peter Mullen, Tony Curran, Patrick J. Adams, to name just a few of them. But it's a dramatisation of the 1988 bombing over Lockerbie in Scotland, which was the deadliest terror attack in British history. And on that cheery note, let's hear from Boydie.
Thank you. There's a lot of interesting things about this series. So first of all, there's the fact that it's the second Lockerbie drama of recent memory. So right around Christmas of late last year, Sky aired its Lockerbie drama, which was called Lockerbie, A Search for Truth.
Which we didn't cover because it was over the Christmas break.
It was over the, It was right in the middle of a really busy time, not only for the podcast, but for TV. Obviously, there's all the other loads and loads of TV specials going on.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, I felt slightly weird for Sky to schedule it around that time. Like a big prestige, true story, you know. I just felt it got lost. I think, you know, I didn't have time to watch it, I remember, and I thought it got lost among the whole tradition of British Christmas TV stuff.
Gavin and Stacey.
Gavin and Stacey, mainly, of course, yes. I was obviously obsessed with Gavin and Stacey, mainly. But that show focused very much on the story of Jim Swire, who's a who was the father of people of someone who was killed in the Lockerbie crash, when 240 passengers died, 16 crew members, and 11 people who were living in Lockerbie where the flight crash exploded over. And it's his, like, it was about his particular search for justice. And he, and I know it's controversial, I remember reading about it a lot, how he thought that the person who they tried for the incident, he felt that he was an innocent man and was wrongfully tried for it. Yeah, and he thought they got the wrong person. That's a whole can of worms. This is a much more general look at the whole thing, the whole story. So this starts with the night of the flight itself, and it shows you, I think it very tastefully, if you like, mm-hmm. doesn't show you the actual explosion.
I was so happy about that.
Yeah, I was dreading that. I was slightly dreading mm-hmm. the idea, you know, would they be tempted to show you the passengers in the plane? And no, they don't do any of that. They show you the aftermath, absolutely, of all of the just the horrendous, mind-numbing fact of having all of these people fall into the ground in Lockerbie, and all the, and that someone has to deal with that, and someone has to deal with investigating, like, the biggest crime scene you've ever seen, basically, because every single individual that was killed in it is their own crime scene. And then you've got all the detritus of the plane and trying to find the black box, etc. And I think they've done a really good job of showing you what went on. They interweave some news footage. You have news footage of Thatcher visiting the area and stuff like that. I remember seeing it, and I remember this whole thing, you know, being on the news. It was huge news for days, weeks on end. It was massive, obviously, quite rightly, because it was such an extraordinary incident. And this, and they have Connor Swindells is kind of like initially in the first couple of episodes, which I watched, our way into the story, because he is a policeman who's investigating, a kind of low level policeman investigating what went on, and he's just kind of like, you know, muddling his way through, trying to work out what best to do, deal with a boy whose whole family's died, apart from his brother who wasn't there, luckily. And he has to, like, how do we deal with this thing? And then you get, from the American point of view, obviously the vast majority of the people who died in it were American. So the FBI in America thinks they should have jurisdiction. There's a lot of jurisdiction claiming stuff going on. Now, one thing I would say is, that is a bit of a trope it's a bit of a tired trope, the jurisdiction fighting things in all crime dramas,
it's
right?
It's probably historical in this case, though.
That's what I was going to say. But in this case, it is absolutely historical. I started to look up because, you know, it does remind you of the reality of the situation. And I started to look up various articles about the whole thing. And there were jurisdictional controversies, absolutely, between the Americans and the British, the Scottish authorities. Mm-hmm. And I thought they dealt with that really well, actually. What could have been felt a bit clichéd rang true, and I think generally the whole thing was a very impressive, sober, non-exploitative account of an absolutely historic, terrible, horrendous incident. And I think it's six parts. I watched the first two, Sundays will have aired first, Mondays will be on tonight on BBC One. I think I'll carry on watch the whole thing, because I think it's absolutely fascinating.
Fascinating. It's not quite as slick or kind of like you look at something like Suspect that we watched recently, and it has a sheen to it. Like it has a, I mean, obviously there's a period element to this as well. Like it is set in the '80s, but there is a, it sounds really, it sounds too strong to say it's a bit rough around the edges. I don't mean that.
I know
like,
what you mean.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like, not, it's, I think deliberate choice. It's not a, like a slick.
Super
it's not. No.
Yeah.
It's quite lo-fi.
What's interesting is it's a Netflix co-production and it hasn't got that Netflix sheen.
No.
So it feels like a BBC.
It thing, does.
Which, you know, is a co-production. Yeah. But I think that's
so it's
fine.
Interesting because it feels like it's sort of maybe straining against budgetary constraints, but perhaps it is a specific choice that they've made for this.
I feel like it would be, right? So.
Similarly, compared to Mr. Bates versus Postal, for example, like that just focuses on the story, establishing the characters. It doesn't. It's not trying to be flash visually or even, you know, in any way slick. And I think that's a similar creative decision for this. I think.
And it's a weighty subject that it covers, and it covers it very well. And you do feel, you know, the how oppressive all of that is and everything that sort of happened to it and how everyone's kind of in shock. And then, you know, as you say, the jurisdictional wranglings might seem a little bit tropey, but, you know, there were, it's, I think it hits home how shocking and confusing it all was, because the Americans were like, this is a horrendous thing. We'll send someone to help out, but then it's like, oh, we'll actually take control. And then is it London? Is it Scotland? Who's in charge? Maggie Thatcher wades in via archive footage. Ronald Reagan wades in via archive footage. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's an interesting one as well, because they actually make those drop-ins, which can go horribly wrong, it has to be said. They make them feel organic, and it doesn't throw off the tone of the show at all. So it is well done, and it's an interesting story. That said, I know how it ends. So there is always that element of knowing, you know, not loads, like I'm not an expert in it, but obviously I'm aware of who ultimately gets held responsible for it, which takes some of the drama out of it.
But isn't it going to also cover the upcoming new trial in the US or something? So it's going to lead us a bit more towards the current day, or if I'm...
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I think it's only leads up to who they do, you know, the investigation, how the investigation ended up. Yeah, but you're right. This is still a live, you know, investigation, extraordinarily. Yeah, there's a case coming up. I think that's partly why, this bit is coming out now in terms of timing.
I enjoyed, sounds like, you know, that sounds inappropriate to say, but I did enjoy this. And I thought that Peter Mullen and Connor Swindells particularly were good in this. I was a bit unsure about Eddie Marsan's accent.
Is that because you know it's Eddie Marsan?
Yes,
and so you're just looking at thinking, why is Eddie Marsan sounding like this?
I was thinking about that. I think it's a bit weird that they've got an American British co-production, they've got Americans in it, and they have got Eddie Marsan playing an American. It is a bit weird, but I think that's what
he's a legend.
Like,
he can do what he likes.
He's a legend.
Yeah.
He is great.
Yeah. I won't have a word said against him.
No. I also enjoy him, but it's just a small note. I think people should watch
The Bombing of Pan Am 103, then, which airs on BBC One, when, Boydie?
So it started yesterday, Sunday, and carries on today, Monday, and it's on Sundays and Mondays for the next 2 weeks. BBC One, 9 o'clock, 2025.
Now, there's a lot of other stuff this week that we couldn't review, isn't there?
Little Disasters, okay?
Mm-hmm. Diane Kruger, Jay Joyner.
Yeah, you can't say anything about it, but I know you've seen it. I know you know about that.
Yes. We can talk about that on Pilot Plus.
Paramount Plus, screening from Thursday, the 22nd of May, 2025. There is Long Bright River, which started yesterday on Channel 4 at 9 o'clock, which is Amanda Seyfried's in that, and looks interesting. It's like a crime drama. Sirens starts on Thursday on the Netflix, which has got no less than the legendary Julianne Moore is in it. Mm. And that looks like quite a lot of fun to me. That looks like a kind of like a perfect couple-y, Big Little Lies-y, Nine Perfect Strangers-y kind of thing about women kind of fighting each other a lot. Can we what?
Do it on Plus.
It's a contender to do on Plus, yeah, along with the other one.
yes, it is.
This is a live planning meeting.
And you know what I'm going to mention as well is Tucci in Italy starts today on Monday on Disney Plus, and that is film star and raconteur and all-round legend Stanley Tucci, he of the very handsome baldness with glasses and stubble.
Okay, listen.
I see where this is going.
I tell you where it's going for me is that after the BAFTAs, one of my friends sent me a picture that I'd posted on Instagram and said, oh my God, wow, like this. And another friend was like, oh, who's that? And it was going back and forth. Turns out said friend thought I'd had a picture with Stanley Tucci. And I was like, no, that's boys.
No, it's me. Can you imagine?
You and the Tucci are interchangeable.
Pretty much, yeah. I think that's established. So yeah, but it's him in Italy, not me, on Disney Plus from today.
Boyd in Italy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there you go. I think that's it. The Chelsea Detective, You and Drama, new series. That's the thing with Adrian Scarborough from Gavin Sushi, which I think we once reviewed.
It's very possible.
Yeah, and it's quite good fun. Sorry.
What is our pick of the week?
I think it's 9 Perfect Strangers, which you haven't even seen.
Yeah, that's my pick of the week.
Well, my pick of the week is Rematch.
Yeah, wow.
Which I rather enjoyed. I'm so tired. Right, okay, we are done. That is it for this week's show. We hope you survived it. If you did, please go on to Apple Podcasts and leave us 9 perfect star ratings. We'd very much appreciate that. It may only go up to 5, in which case, just leave that instead. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we are at Pilot TV Pod, at Kay Ribeiro, at Boyd Hilton, and at James C. Dyer. You can send us messages on pilottv@empiremagazine.com. We will be back in your ears on Thursday if you subscribe to Pilot Plus, when we will be talking about possibly Sirens, possibly Little Disasters. We will find out. We will also be talking about the 6th penultimate episode of The Last of Us Season 2 in our spoiler section. If you do not subscribe to Pilot Plus, why don't you subscribe to Pilot Plus? It's not very expensive and you get loads of stuff for it, including this podcast early and ad-free and an extra podcast and spoiler specials. And you'll also get all of the Andor spoiler specials, which I'm cramming in there as well. So it's mega value is what I'm saying. Next week on this show, I don't know what we're going to be doing. Boydie, any thoughts? Department Q.
Well, Department Q is
the rehearsal.
With Matthew Goody. Matthew Good.
yes.
The rehearsal, which is weirdly on Sky Arts. There's Death Valley, which is with Timothy Spall.
Yeah.
The Audible Ring, Timothy Spall, which is quite a good fun. That started the weekend, but it was embargoed. The Lost Anniversaries on BBC One. Do you know what that is? That's another Leanne Moriarty adaptation. Can you fucking believe it?
Did you miss her?
Yeah, I'd miss her. And
that was a quality Moriarty gag.
That was
by
a very Moriarty gag. That was good. I got it. The Better Sister on Prime Video with Jessica Biel. I don't know why I mispronounced it.
I don't know what you're doing now.
Jessica Biel in that. These are all a lot. Did I say Lost in Russia? Yeah, that's the
Miranda Richardson.
Yeah, Miranda Richardson one. Lots to choose from. Except I think I'm pretty sure Department Q is embargoed till the day.
Of course,
which is the biggest one.
Of course, yes. Right. Until then, I'm going to have a little bit of a lie down. Or possibly go to a party. One that I've been invited to. Pilot out.